podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Again, they've only got three forwards in the lineout, and it's been left to Chris Wyatt, and how well he did that again. Scott Quinnell, a bust by Scott Gibbs. Scott Gibbs is through. Scott Gibbs has scored. What an
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. I know a lot of people like to use this podcast as their kind of fix for getting all the latest news on Welsh rugby. None more so than my illustrious co-host, the Mighty Murph, who's informed me he doesn't know anything about the topics we're going to be talking about this week.
No.
I've
been enjoying myself this weekend, so I haven't really followed Welsh Twitter as closely as I normally do. So, luckily Steph's here.
Exactly, mate. Exactly. Everyone's allowed an off week, and just as well, we've got the man of the moment, Steph Thomas, with us as well. Welcome back, Steph. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Been a busy couple of weeks, but all good. Thanks for the invite. Always enjoy coming on this podcast.
It's great to have you on, and I'm sure we'll touch upon the story that you broke last week that continues to rumble on. So we're gonna have a look at that. We're gonna start though by having a look at Friday night's game, the Dragons' agonising loss to Cardiff. It probably wasn't the prettiest game of rugby in the world, but definitely a game the Dragons should have won. And no shortage of drama, if not quality of rugby. Did you catch that one, Murph?
Yeah, saw that one. It was like a long time ago Friday night, but
it does really, doesn't it?
Yeah. The double red cards, I suppose, it should have been wide open after that. You know, the first one, it did look as though it was going to be a more open game, but somehow when there was another player taken off again after that, there seemed to be less space every time they did that on the pitch. So, it got to be a bit of a old school derby, which we haven't really had of late. They've been high scoring derbies this year a lot of the time, and it's very traditional sort of nip and tuck derby game where everyone knows each other too well, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the red cards there. We've both you and I, Murph, and when Steph's been on, we've spoken about red cards, particularly in relation to head contact. Both reds for you, Steph?
Yeah, 100% the right decisions on both occasions. You saw, Joe Davis come in. It was just straight to the head. I'm not saying that he intended to hurt the player, but, you know, when you connect to the head and it's direct, there's only one option. So that was the right decision. The Belcher one, the player, Will Reid, I think it was dipping. So there's a bit more mitigation. But as the ref said, he was always coming in. He wasn't really attempting to wrap his arms. Shoulder first, again, no option. So the right decisions, I think, on both occasions.
Yeah, I do as well. I thought we were going to get down to one of those situations where the TMO and the assistants were almost talking him down a bit, which seems to be happening a bit too often for my liking. But ultimately, that one, you know, they're both clear reds for me. That one was probably a lot more dangerous just because of the force that was involved. But I just think that's how those head collisions should be refereed, that the benefit of the doubt has to go to the player who's been hit in the head at the end of the day. And I think, you know, yes, there was you could start to argue on the way that it's been refereed this season, there was mitigation, but that was a bloody dangerous tackle from Belcher. And I think, yeah, stone cold reds in my, but that's how I want to see him ref.
What was strange about that red card, the Belcher Will Reid one, was Will Reid was going to the ground anyway, so the only reason for Belcher to really hit him any force is to make sure he didn't offload in the process of going to ground. So when I at full speed I thought, well, you know, the crowd went mad at the time. I thought, well, he's just hit him, and they didn't hard, and they didn't like it, because there's no reason why you'd hit a guy around the head who's actually about to hit the, you know, fall into the ground as he's doing it. And then when they showed the replay, it was just straight in the face, you know, almost. So that was cast iron, I would say, that red. Nothing, absolutely no. Like, I know you say this thing about the TMO trying to talk him down to a yellow, but it's just nothing. There's nothing to base that on at all. It's just a straight red. And the second red card wasn't that straightforward. But like you say, if someone's getting shoulders to the head, the thing is, do you know we've been over this hundreds of times. You know the dinosaurs when they're wanging on about you can't tackle properly anymore and all this. Mm. But wherever the ball carrier puts his head, you've got to avoid it. Mm. They're all big. You can pick other parts of their body. It's not, you know, it's not. It's just, it's dragging on much longer than I would have liked. When it's quite a few seasons since they brought in the straight reds for head contact, and it's just dragging on and on, where players are not, they're just not getting it. So I don't know why that is, but
I think we covered this a couple of weeks ago. I think it's because this season, in particular the last 6 months, there has been a lot more mitigating circumstances or things that are deemed to be mitigation that I think last season wouldn't have been. And I think as a result, players' habits haven't changed as much as they would have done if it was hard line as it had been in previous seasons.
Mm. Yeah.
But there we go. So that was one issue. The other issue being the Dragons' sheer inability to close out games. I thought, obviously, looking at it slightly one-eyed, there was a really big opportunity to get that done. If that kick from Will Reid goes over, you know, there's a win there at home. Steph, is there any reason for me to feel optimistic going into next season? I mean, it was only a one-point defeat, but another defeat nonetheless.
Yeah, I think Murph hit the nail on the head. It was like a traditional derby, wasn't it? A lot of these derbies aren't the best quality games. But there's a lot of tribalism. It was full-blooded. I personally thought Cardiff had a bit more class out wide, and that told in the end, maybe. But yeah, I think the Dragons did sort of put themselves in a position to win and couldn't quite get it over the line. I think, obviously, Will Reid missed the penalty, but I don't think it's fair to put it all on his shoulders. They did create, as I said, they did have a lot of chances to win the game, and they just couldn't take it. And I think when you're in an environment where you lose more games than you win, it's a habit then that you lose games. And it's the same, you know, on the flip side, if you're in an environment you're winning all the time, you tend to win games even when you play badly. And, the Dragons are just in a rut, and they. But I think, to answer your question, there's reasons to be a bit more optimistic next season, because I think they've recruited pretty well. I mean, we spoke over this the other week, didn't we? You know, Lonsdale and George Naught, I think they're good signings. Hanrahan brings some experience as well. I actually think Rodri Jones is a good signing. So I think they've got a stronger squad next season, but it's culturally where I think that they need to change it around. And is Dean Ryan the right man? Not sure.
Obviously we've covered that a couple of times recently as well, and I think the answer from all of us is, got to get those results next season early on to find out. The thing that encouraged me, though, Murph, from a Dragons perspective, look, Will Reid, I thought, had an outstanding game. I actually love the fact that he stood up and wanted to take that kick. Though I know, you know, you could argue that the line out was faltering, so there was no point going for the corner. But actually, for a 20-year-old to stand up and go, "Yeah, I'm gonna bang this over," I think, in a way, it kind of smacks of a player who's less damaged than the rest of that squad, because, you know, he's been in a Newport side that's been winning most of the season, and, you know, and obviously he's less been less exposed to some of the hammerings that the Dragons have been on the end of.
Well, I think he could, in a space of, I don't know, 4 weeks, he could be the find of the season in Welsh rugby. He's come from, I guess, armchair supporters nowhere, you know. He's been playing in the Premiership all season, and he looks as competent as any 20-year-old who's been on the scene. You know, he's got a lot less experience than, say, Sam Costello, But his performances so far, already, you know, admittedly just a handful of games, he could be the find of the season. Especially for the Dragons.
Yeah, it is that squad depth that Steph's touched on as well. Because with that plus Hanrahan, you've now got three outside halves. Whereas Sam Davis, prior to March, played virtually every minute of every game at 10, and I think it's really affected him. Actually, I think he got his career back on track at the Dragons, you know, with a good first couple of seasons, and then he's just been flogged to death this season.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think obviously Sam, I think you hit the nail on the head. He did get his career back on track because I don't think he was treated particularly well at the Ospreys, if I'm being honest with you. But I think it's easy to get complacent because he knew in his head that, you know, he's going to play every game anyway because there's no alternative to him. But obviously they've signed JJ Hanrahan next season, and, you know, he's not the most naturally gifted player, but he's an experienced player, good goal kicker, good game manager. And now you've obviously seen Will Reid come through as well, and he's probably potentially the best Dragons 10 and a future international from what I've seen. I don't want to get carried away because that's what we like in Wales, a couple of good games and you're starting 10. But you know, there is obvious potential there. And, you know, going back to your previous question, that's another thing to be optimistic about is there's a bit more depth in each position. You know, Sam Davis now, you know, we'll see what he's made of. He's going to have to improve. He's going to have to fight for his jersey, and hopefully that'll make him a better player, because it doesn't look like Will Reid is in any mood to give up at number 10 shirt.
No, it doesn't. Just while we're on recruitment, and before we move on to kind of some of the off-field news this week, Cardiff, Steph. There's a few kind of a few recruits coming in. Obviously, Fallertown, Liam Williams being kind of the most high profile. Still feels though, looking at that squad and the season that they've had, that they could use a bit more bolstering there, really.
Yeah, I actually asked Di Young this question in the press conference, and he didn't explicitly say this, but you got the impression that there just wasn't the funding there to strengthen the squad any further. Although, you know, it's fairly obvious that he wants to strengthen the front five. I mean, he signed Lopetti Timani. He's actually played more rugby in the back row, but he's a guy that wins collisions, which is, you know, they haven't got many players that do that. Very experienced, and he's better than what they've already got. But that front five is a problem. I mean, they've needed a hooker for about a decade. they haven't sorted that one out yet. That, yeah. You know, that's something that they need to look at moving forward. I still think tight end is a position that, you know, Dimitri Arhip's a good servant, but he's getting on. I personally, you know, think that I'm not convinced with Dylan Lewis as a scrummager, and they probably need another second row as well, maybe even a number eight. So, you know, obviously they got, I say that's a stupid thing to say, because they got Faletau coming in, but how many games is Faletau going to play? You know, he's a world-class player. Some would say he is the best number eight in the world, but the structure we've got in Wales with this 80-20 funding split, it's almost as if a lot of players, you know, it's almost as if they're doing, they think that they're doing their regions a favour when they turn up to play. You know, it's not created the best culture at the pro size in Wales. And, you know, he's a world-class player, and in the big games, you should make the difference. But, you know, they need a number eight, like Callum Maffone need a Scarlet's number eight, who plays week in, week out, gets you over the game line, doesn't drop below 7 out of 10. And it's that non-Welsh qualified player that, you know, Tamani's one of them, but they need a few more of those, I think.
It's that role Nick Williams did for them for a number of years. You know, again, they're week in, week out, defying his age, carrying ball, exactly. You know, just being an absolute nuisance. And let's move it on to some of the listeners' questions that we've had in. And I'll throw this kind of over to you, Steph, because the other thing that happened on Friday night is Dragons chairman David Buttress, there was a Q&A with the fans at Rodney Parade, but then he also was on Scrum 5 as well. There was a couple of quotes in that, you know, I suppose raised a few eyebrows. He said that we need to accept that each Welsh team has a different purpose, which prompted Dav James to call it absolute nonsense. But Jamie Phillips has asked this: what are your thoughts on regions having different purposes? Did you understand what he meant with that quote?
I know what he means. it's interesting and it's difficult to answer because we obviously we don't know what it's going to look like next season and beyond yet. I think we'll stay with four teams from what I'm hearing, which is obviously positive, I think. But I think the problem is when you've got a limited amount of money, you know, you can't... I know it sounds unfair, but you can't give everyone the same amount of money, otherwise you're just going to get mediocrity. So you need a tiered funding model, and realistically, as it stands, because they've got less players in the Welsh squad or fewer players, the Dragons will probably have less. That doesn't mean that they're going to be a development team, but, you know, it's... You know, every team is going to have a different approach in terms of how they be successful. You know, I think I've seen David on Twitter talk about the non-Welsh qualified market. That's something I think that's underutilised. You know, back in the day, we had the likes of Xavier Rush, Tito, Regan King, Molotika, Tia, those type of players. And they were really beneficial in terms of developing players. So I think, you know, the WIU need to work closely with the regions to get the right calibre of foreign players in. I think that'll be beneficial. But to answer his question, I think what we're going to get is maybe a more extreme version of a tiered funding model. I mean, I can't say for certain, but I'm not in these meetings, but that's probably what I'd expect. But I don't think that necessarily means that the Dragons are going to be a development team. In fact, David Buttress has explicitly said that's not the case. But yeah, I think it's going to be a tiered funding model, and teams are going to have to do things a bit differently if they want to be successful.
You could argue, based on this season, a development region would be a step up from where we've been, but that's the gallows humour, I suppose. What's your take on it, Murph?
First of all, kudos to Davis James for speaking his mind, because we were on about last week that all coverage is a little bit... vanilla, a little bit playing it safe. And so for David James, we mentioned current players. If you have them on guests, they're not going to say anything controversial. It's just not in their interest. David James, you know, just called it out straight away. A load of nonsense. Like, so it was nice, quite refreshing. Well, we've been going on about it off air just now, haven't we, Jed, about if supposedly the English clubs are going to be on a £5 million salary cap. That's the same as near enough the regional sides. Yet they're able to stockpile front five forwards like no one's business. And most of the regions get by on three tidy second rows, arguably tidy second rows. So where is the difference? I can't... Steph's here, so hopefully Steph might know. But where is the difference between what the regions have to pay to get some... sizable forwards in, and obviously there's the draw of the Gallagher Premiership is part of it, but they must be paying, what I'm just trying to say to Jed was, the English clubs must be paying less for more than the regions do, if we are genuinely on the same salary, roughly the same salary cap.
Yeah, so the talk on the grapevine for a while has been that a lot of the salaries in Welsh rugby has been, you know, there's been a lot of inflation, a lot of players are allegedly overpaid. I mean, who am I to say whether somebody's overpaid? But that's the general sort of school of thought. I mean, we've got this pay banding system, but, you know, the English clubs have sort of aggressively, or PRL have aggressively sort of addressed that with the salary cap. Obviously, the English clubs have got the marquee player, and I think that, I think. I need to double check this. Isn't there about £600,000 extra they can spend on academy players and that sort of thing? But right. You are right. I haven't got all the answers, obviously. But you look at England. Obviously, they got more play. They got a higher player base. They got bigger players as well. We're naturally not that big in Wales, so I suppose that helps them when they get second rows. But yeah, it's difficult. I think there has been a lot of waste with the Welsh regions as well. I mean, I've always been of the opinion that the Welsh Rugby Union haven't invested enough and haven't given the regions the money that they deserve. They do deserve more money, but at the same time, you know, there's a lot of players who you would argue are, I'm not going to name names, are pretty average and probably shouldn't be, you know, at the level they're at, and they're playing big money on them, and they should maybe be you know, using that to sign a different profile of player. I personally, you know, we're changing it a bit now, but I think we've underused the Exiles market a little bit. The Dragons are addressing that, but not, and Lonsdale, Scarlets have done it quite well, but that's been underutilised. But I just think we need to be a bit smarter with how we spend our money. But I think probably the reason is that, you know, there's far more players in England. They got their profile of players is a lot different. You know, they've got bigger, more physical players. So it's easier for them to pick a player out of the English Championship and throw him into a Premiership game. And they've got a lot of injuries in their squad because, number one, the player's probably of, you know, his physicality is probably pretty close to the Premiership anyway, even if he doesn't have the same skill set as the Welsh Premiership. You know, that's an issue, the Welsh Premiership. It's the gap between Welsh Premiership and regional rugby. People rubbish regional rugby, but the gap between Premiership and regional rugby is enormous. It's far, far too high. And, you know, it's refreshing to hear that Nigel Walker's trying to sort that out because I think if we sorted that out, it would help a lot. But I just think it's probably down to, you know, the amount of players they got in England and the sort of physical profile of player they got.
Yeah, but, I agree. And there must be just the... On the mathematics alone, players must be getting overpaid because me and Jed were going through the squad at Northampton and the second rows they got. There's about 5 second rows on their books who would probably get in the Welsh squad. And so out of all, if you try to get one of them to come to the Blue Cardiff or whatever, he'd want paying accordingly. But he must be playing Northampton. The attraction must be that he would be willing to pay for less if they're staying within the £5,000 budget, because the £5 million budget. And your point about players being overpaid and the regions not, I don't think they're hard nosed professionals when it comes to negotiations. Because I obviously the South Wales Goldfish Bowl, I know of players who've got contracts on sentimentality more than anything they can do on the pitch. You know, players who've had not huge contracts, obviously, but contracts on the prospect of not really playing much, not actually making many appearances during the season, but still on a professional rugby contract. So, you know, they're definitely not hard-nosed enough. I can't speak for all the regions, but the ones I know, you know, I've got an insight into. It would be much more cutthroat, I think, over the border, and maybe that's why they're able to attract more. Well,
I think as well, you know, if you're, and this is just a guess, you know, if you're the Dragons, right, and you want to sign a second row, and you sit down at the second row, and he's not, say he's a non-Welsh qualified player, and he's got offers from, I don't know, somebody like the London Irish or a Glasgow or something like that, and the Dragons want him. He talks to the Dragons, he looks at them, he thinks this is an awful team. You know, they haven't won a home game all season, which is terrible. You can't get away from that. Yeah. So Glasgow could say, oh look, we play this brand of rugby, you know, we've developed player X, Y, and Z for Scotland, London Irish, you know, you're living in London, all this sort of thing. But so the Dragons are gonna, the only thing they could offer them really is money. So I suppose that for him to choose, for this player to choose the Dragons over an English Premiership club or Glasgow or Connacht or Edinburgh or something, the Dragons are going to have to pay more than
pay over the odds. Yeah.
And I think as well, you know, like obviously English players want to play for England, and if you leave England, then obviously you don't play. Like ask Zach Mercer. Mm. So I suppose that helps, and the appearance fees for England is, you know, the highest of the. I think it is the highest in world rugby. Obviously, only a certain amount of players actually play for England, of course. But I think, you know, it's just the fact they've got so many players, I imagine, and that drives the costs down a little bit because they want to stay in England, they want to play for England. Mm. And also, you know, if you're coming through at Leicester, you know, you're in one of the best environments in world rugby, one of the best forwards coach in the world in Borthwick, great players to learn from. But what can the Dragons offer you apart from, you know, money and, you know, if you're a Welsh international, you have to play in Wales.
So, it's a case in point, because Rhys Carey went to Saracens for less money than Cardiff were offering. So, you know, that is definitely part of it. But, your point there about a player looking at three different clubs, if he looks at the resources at the Dragons and sees there's only two other second rows, he knows for that money he's going to be flogged every week, making tons of minutes. Whereas if he goes to Northampton, he can have a week off every fortnight because there's so many other players available. But the only reason I'm bringing this up now is because they're supposedly on, if the whole of those clubs, like for sale, for example, they've just got shed loads of South Africans, and they can't be cheap, all of them. And so I don't know how that £5 million. I know there's an exemption for the star overseas signing, and then for some academy boys, but that only bumps them up to £6 million, say. And I don't know how they've got such fully formed squads, and I was just looked threadbare all the time. I mean, with the comparison that Jed made, was there's three out and out second rows at Cardiff. And then you get Josh Turnbull doing the filling in bit, you know, or James Ratty or whatever. So it doesn't actually, obviously it keeps over my head, but it just doesn't add up, does it? I mean, I don't think it works out on paper.
I mean, the only people can actually answer this question like accurately are obviously the people involved at the regions and the players. But it does, from what we've discussed, it does point to the fact that, you know, there is an issue in Welsh rugby with regards how much players are getting paid. I mean, if players are listening to this podcast, they'd probably, you know, destroy this argument. But because obviously they do put their bodies on the line, and, you know, there's risk of concussion and the careers could end at any moment and stuff. So, you know, they do deserve to be paid a lot of money. But I think you're right. There are questions that have got to be asked, considering there's a £5 million salary cap in England, and, you know, they seem to be making more of what you know, of the resources they got.
At the very least, they're managing their budget better. At the very least, you can see.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing with this as well is it'll be interesting to see next year as well, because if you were to go back pre-pandemic, I don't think you could say that English sides were managing their budget particularly well. For, you know, based on looking at the profit and loss of all of those clubs, none of them make. No, it's hard to make any money in professional rugby because there's not enough money in there for that goes out. You know, it's you know, for a long time, I think it was only Northampton and Exeter who were in the black. Northampton slipped out of that, and Exeter's was, if you were to do a bit of, what's the word I'm looking for? A bit of
creative accounting.
Not even that deep digging into accounting, you'd see that their sponsor was also their owner. So, you know, so that obviously skews that somewhat. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out in the long run, because you mentioned Sale there already. Obviously, they've lost Faf de Klerk, who's the other high profile player they've lost for next season. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that pans out over a longer period of time. And plus, I think Steph is. It's interesting. Obviously, you know, we know the Dragons aren't, haven't been up to scratch on the pitch, but he is underselling a night out in Newport, which would probably be a big draw for many of these lads. So, so you know, why else would Bertrand swap Malbec for Malpas? Eh? There we go. It's all there. We quickly finish on this one in the first half, and then in the second half, we're going to be selecting our squad to go to South Africa, because Wade Pivak selects his next week. But yeah, we have had proposed reform to the international calendar this week, with, I suppose you could call it, something that's perhaps comparable to football's Nations League. Steph, again, as the most informed out of this trio, you're probably best positioned to lead us on this. Essentially, you've got the Six Nations would remain the same, but then summer tours and the autumn internationals would essentially be a kind of a tiered structure whereby you could be promoted and relegated from those respective divisions. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. So there's a lot to debate on this point, I think. And I haven't really made my mind up.
We should have taken the break, shouldn't we?
I haven't really made my mind up over whether this proposed tournament's a good thing or a bad thing, to be honest. So I've heard from three exceptional sources that this new tournament, if it gets off the ground, could bring in between 40 to 50 million pounds for the Welsh Rugby Union alone. And I assume it would be similar to other Tier 1 nations. So that's obviously a good reason for having it, I suppose. I think one of the complaints, and I've been one of these, is that a lot of international rugby is meaningless. You know, the Autumn Internationals, it's, yeah, you know, it's always nice to beat Australia or South Africa.
Tematos as well.
You know, you always want to win it, every game you play, but, you know, there's so much international rugby. It's just devalued the product, and there's no, I know they have these Mickey Mouse trophies at the end of them, but they don't mean anything, do they? So if there wasn't, you know, that's one complaint. There needs to be a bit more meaning to international rugby. I suppose this does help that to an extent. Obviously, I can't remember what he was called, but there's the word nation in every proposal, isn't there? So a few years back, obviously, they wanted to include the sort of Six Nations games in it, and you know, there'd be relegation from the Six Nations, and the likes of Scotland, Wales, Italy especially weren't keen on that. But this new format would allow them to scrap relegation, or the prospect of relegation in the Six Nations, and it would also mean that South Africa wouldn't have to join the Six Nations, which most people are against by what I've read on social media, and the relegation would be from this tournament that happens every 2 years, and then there'd be a second competition with emerging nations like Georgia, Uruguay, even, you know, all these countries. So it does allow the Tier 2 nations to grow, so that's a good thing. So there are a lot of good points, but, you know, Stephen Jones wrote a great, I thought it was an excellent opinion piece in the Sunday Times today, and again, you know, there's just too much international rugby. It's just going to devalue the World Cup. You know, win the World Cup, and then there's this other competition the next year, and it's just, I don't know, it just there's not enough. It's different in soccer when there's so many teams that play the sport. You can have these competitions and it doesn't devalue anything, but realistically, we like to talk up, you know, the prospects of the US getting good and all these sort of countries, but it's going to take at least like 30 years for them to be really competitive, I imagine, if they proper invest in it. And it's just, you know, there's not enough countries really, and it's just going to devalue it. And more than anything, it's the club game that's going to really hurt the club game. You know, we always complain that you know, at Welsh regional level, that we lose our, you know, top players for large periods of the season, and you're going to lose them for even more now, although hopefully they'd be compensated more, and it's just going to devalue it. And also, you know, player welfare, you know, international rugby is just brutal. It's just level up physically and intensity wise to club rugby, and they're talking about dropping one of the fallow weeks in the Six Nations, which could be devastating really for a lot of these players. And, you know, now you've got players who can say, you know, look, I'm not going to tour South Africa this summer because my body's absolutely buggered and I want to make the World Cup. But if private equity like CVC and Silver Lake are putting so much money in these competitions, they're not going to be able to do that, which is a point that Stephen Jones made in the Sunday Times column. So there's pros and cons to this. I'm not quite sure which side of the fence I fall on, but I just know that, you know, without a proper global calendar, and I don't think this gives us that, where there's no international games played the same time as club games, then the game's just not going to move forward. And I do worry about player welfare. That's my
Yeah. Point. Seemingly though, Steph, the noises out of the kind of the player camp seem a lot less negative than they were 2 or 3 years ago when the previous proposal was on the card. I think seemingly there seems to be a buy-in from whoever it is who's looking after the players' interests within World Rugby. I wonder kind of what the difference is this time around.
I'm not sure is the answer to that. I mean, it's good that the players are happy with it, which means that they've probably had talks with World Rugby and all the governing bodies. So that's, if they're comfortable with it, then fine. But even with that, it's just the club game year on year just keeps getting, it keeps getting less and less. I mean, why would you buy a season ticket at Scarlets or Ospreys if if you're not going to see your best players play more than a handful of games a season. You know, for me, you know, these last 2 weeks of European rugby have been fantastic, better than the Six Nations, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of entertainment value. And it's just going to get worse and worse. I think there's a lot of growth in the club game, if I'm being honest, which hasn't been tapped into. And that's my biggest concern, how it's going to affect the club game. And there'll just be too much international rugby as well. You know, it's the same team playing the same team all the time. And yeah, I'm on the fence with this one, if I'm being honest.
It's a fascinating point. I'm really keen to get your thoughts on it as well, Murph. So we're gonna take this over into the second half. But yeah, definitely want to build on those points about growing the club game and the lack of a global calendar as well. But we're going to do all of that after this very, very quick break. Right, Murph, we're talking before the break there, and I know you're desperate to have your opinion on this, and the listeners are desperate to hear Murph's hot take on the Nations League or the League of Nations or whatever we're calling this. I'm keen, as Steph said, I would be keen to look at, you know, personally for me, this is a step in the right direction in terms of having less meaningless rugby, but that doesn't apply to the club game, you know, because again, there is just too much rugby played all across the world, particularly around the Welsh regions and the leagues that we play in. And to me, it feels like the pandemic was a real big opportunity to actually hit reset on a lot of these things, and I feel like we've completely, you know, we've missed that opportunity if there's not similar reform that comes to the club game as well. What are your thoughts, Murph?
Well, it feels like Rugby Union is in the position that cricket was in, or might still be in, I don't know, but it's like a Commonwealth sport, and they can't, it's not, because the countries are spread so far across the globe, you can't get, you know, like football's easy, you can just have a European competition, and it's either club or internationally, and it just works, because everyone's within a short flight of each other, or at the same time zone at least, you know what I mean, and you just... That's not possible with cricket or rugby, and cricket's like folding over on itself all the time. You know, the global calendar has changed just because of the amount of money in the Indian Premier League. So everyone else has to, internationally at least, has to down tools while that happens, because the players get paid so much in there. And I don't think that's going to happen in rugby, but within the same... process of trying to work out where how to fund everything and looking for new ways. Going back to Steph's point about getting rid of the fallow week in the Six Nations, that favours the bigger squads. So the small nations like Wales, Scotland, Italy suffer if there's no fallow week, because you've got to rotate your players, and then as soon as we rotate, we weaken our team. So I'm against it. Just on that fact alone, I'm against all of it. And there was another point in there which is I forget now. I don't know if I'm just getting old, but
you are getting old, mate. I'm
definitely getting older, but I try not to be mentally old if I can help it. you know, the Autumn Internationals weren't a thing 20 years ago, and yeah. they've become. So there's no, to me, there's no loss in losing those, getting rid of those. But I don't like too much rugby in the summer. I mean, one of the ones that is, you know, that is properly meaningless is the summer tours. So Wales going to go down to South Africa, get stuffed three times, and like no real draw in South Africa to watch their side hammering someone, and no real benefit to the Welsh squad development. Well, they're not going to risk too many youngsters against South Africa. There's not going to be any benefit in that regard. So those things could, I suppose, be jettisoned. And like I say, the Autumn Internationals are only 20-year-old. So that, you know, it does, if you can mop up those, but I don't like it impinging on the successful bits. And I don't, as you two both mentioned, I don't like it impinging on the undervalued club game.
Yeah, and that's it. That's it for me. It has been the problem with rugby since it turned professional, is there is so much self-interest. And, you know, you can argue with good reason. You know, if you're the CEO of Premiership Rugby Limited, your job is to look out for the interests of your stakeholders, which are those clubs, right? But ever since then, it's just been, right, how do we play more rugby to generate more money? And like we've said before, loads of that money has exited the game, you know, via the players. And, you know, lots of clubs have gone bust in the early days of kind of chasing that dream. But there is no real clear and defined structure. There is no rational rugby calendar. And until you solve that, I don't think any of these problems go away. I think it probably, you know, like you said, it probably is better to have something meaningful in the, or a bit more meaningful in the summer than it is just random summer tours, which is a hangover from the amateur game anyway, I think, you know. And the reason the Autumn Internationals, I think, was successful to start with was because you still had that enthusiasm of, you know, the old school, we're playing Australia or we're playing South Africa, because you really looked forward to those tours. But the reason they were so special was because they didn't happen very often.
Yeah, no,
you know, so you would have South Africa touring Wales and England and playing a load of tour games and then playing that one-off test. And that was brilliant. But when you're playing Australia four times in the same calendar year, it doesn't have the same appeal. So those things have kind of been flogged to death a bit. So yeah, but it, to me, and you know, the club game is the fascinating thing. And I've said this, you know, if you're playing attacking scrum bingo, this is probably my go-to point. Is that I honestly think that the private investment has more chance of generating genuine reform to the calendar and to the game than World Rugby does, because ultimately everyone is going to be drawn in by the money that they've got and completely dependent on it. And you know, I still think there is more to come from CVC, and whether that's some kind of World Club Cup type thing that happens or something of that ilk, then you know there will be more changes. But for me, I don't know, until there's a proper reform of the global calendar, we strip back loads of meaningless rugby, we're still in the same kind of the same problem, really. Too much rugby, too much of it meaningless, and you're going to flog the players to death.
Yeah, I think as well, if with all this international rugby, and as I said, they'll allegedly, you know, there'll be meaningful games. And what I mean by meaningful is there'll be some form of
something on the line.
Yeah. Something on the line. But that'll mean that these clubs, they may as well be clubs among the access they got to players, but these nations will have, you know, they'll have bigger squads, they'll have to carry bigger squads because of injuries and whatnot. So, especially maybe France won't be affected as much because it's a lot wealthier, obviously. But Wales then, and Scotland, and you know, the smaller nations, the club game will get worse and worse, and they'll have a knock-on effect probably on player development as well, I'd imagine, because people seem to misunderstand sometimes. They think just putting a team full of kids, you know, 18 to 22 or 23, will help them develop, but you need experienced players around you. You need your senior internationals around you to tell you, are you doing this wrong? Need to do this that way. And if those senior internationals aren't available, which they aren't already, but if they're available even less, you know, then player development is just going to suffer as well. And I just think I agree with you. I just think that there is more long term growth in the club game, I think, than, or the provincial game, whatever you want to call it, than the international game, because there's only a finite amount of countries that play, that seriously play international rugby. And, you know, as you said, years ago, Wales would play in the autumn. They'd play two tier two nations, like a Tonga and a Romania, and then they'd play South Africa one year, Australia the next, New Zealand the next. And it would be special when they played Australia or South Africa. But now you play them all the time, you know. If you can't get tickets, well, there's always tickets available for those two. They haven't sold out Australia, South Africa for about 15 years.
Yeah.
New Zealand's different because we haven't beaten them since 1953, and you want to be there when they do, you know, when they do win. But you know, I get no buzz when Wales play Australia. I get no buzz when Wales play South Africa anymore. you know, obviously I want Wales to win, but it's just not the same. And I just think people are going to get turned off a bit as well. So, yeah, I you know, it feels like we've come to a conclusion that this is a bad thing, I think.
Well, while we're talking meaningless international summer rugby, this brings us seamlessly into picking our squads. I know Steph has taken this very seriously and has spent the afternoon. There we go. Even I've made notes. Look, tonight, and Murph's got a packet of Rothmans down there with
one of these kids is doing his own thing. Yeah, yeah. They're going to wing it all the way through.
You said 37 man squad. Can we stretch it to 38? I'm on the fence. Like, there's, you know,
that's the jeopardy. I want to see who it is. Yeah, I'll make a call at the end whether there's exceptional circumstances. We're going to start in the start as we always do in the front row. Just the ground rules for anyone who's not listened to us fudge our way through these selections in the past. It's a committee decision, so committee blazers and ties and jumpers are all on. So we'll have a consensus between the three of us, and obviously it's our team, our squad, rather than necessarily what Wayne Pivak is going to pick. We will start as we always do with loose heads, though. I'll give you the runners and riders, if you like. For me, this would be pretty straightforward. But my selections would be to go for Nicky Smith, Gareth Thomas, and Rhys Carey.
That's what I've gone for.
Murph?
Same. I mean, if you don't pick Rhys Carey now, you'll never pick him. He's playing the best rugby of his career, of his short career, and Wyn Jones is injured, and so it just makes it straightforward, I think.
And I think
we're racing through this, so just on
Nicky Smith, I don't really understand why he's not had a look in recently, because he's been excellent for the Ospreys. He's a good scrummager, he's good over the ball as well, you know, carries well. He's not the biggest, that might go against him, but I think he deserves to go on this tour, if I'm being honest with you. I'd be disappointed if he wasn't there.
I think we've said this before, I think he's been harshly treated, if I'm honest, in previous squad selections. Right, tight head. I think we'll probably all be in agreement that Tom Francis is your first choice.
Yeah.
After that, it gets a bit less clear cut. So, I'm assuming Leon Brown's going to be injured. I'm assuming Samson Lee won't be available for selection.
Oh, he's gone.
Which leaves really Dylan Lewis and Will Griff John.
You've missed one. You've missed one.
Have I?
I've got to make it interesting for you. Tom Botha.
Tom Botha is Welsh qualified now, isn't he?
And he can
scrummage.
You know, he doesn't do much around the park, but he's a good scrummager. And
is he fit?
I think he's fit at the moment, yeah. I mean, people obviously will probably throw stones at me because of the residency thing, but I want tight as I can scrummage. So,
yeah.
I would consider him, that's all I'm saying.
All right, well, he's on the shortlist then, Steph.
Will Griff John doesn't seem to start many games for the Scarlets.
No, he doesn't.
Is it Javen Sebastian or other tight end who I can't remember the name of?
Harry O'Connor.
And the Gypsy King. What's his bloody name?
Samson Lee
is it, the other. You never seem to see Will Griff John starting many games for his club, so even though I like him, I would be very hesitant to take him, even though we haven't got many options. I'd be hesitant if he's not getting ahead of those players.
It's a shame. Samson Lee, at one point, he looked like he was the scrummager we needed, but he's just had too many injuries, really bad Achilles injuries, and was struck again, so unfortunately he's out. But Will Griff, he's had an injury, but he's been disappointing, because he was good at Sale. It might have helped that he had like Luda Jager and that type of player, that sort of power supporting him in the scrum. But you know, he's really struggled in the scrum for them, and he's not really done much around the park. And look at Dylan Lewis; he's not a great scrummager, but he does contribute around the park, jackling and whatnot. And I'm far from convinced with Will Griff John, if I'm being honest. Who goes?
Right, are we any clearer on who else is going here other than Tom Francis? I mean, realistically, from what we've said then, it looks like Tom Boat is going as number two.
Yeah.
He'd be in my squad. He'd be in my squad.
He's never been picked before, though, has he?
No.
No, he's only just qualified, hasn't he, I think? Or yeah. Relatively recently.
Well, he's not going to be far away, whatever, you know. From what we've said, it looks like a shoot between Will Griffiths, who really gets a run out, and Tom Boulter.
You could, I suppose, the Dragons prop is a Coleman. He's getting better. I'm not convinced. Harry O'Connor's a good prospect, but you don't want to throw a young kid tight end against the box. It could ruin them.
I would say that
it'll probably ruin the old ones as well. By the way,
this is Damien's limitation. This is no going away from that.
I think I would go. I would take Dylan Lewis just for. Look, we all know he's not the world's strongest scrummager, but he is good around the park, and he's at least got some experience. And the other two. God, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, maybe I'll take Tom Boulter then. What are you doing, Murph?
Whoever, according to the S&C guy, whoever's fittest at the moment, out of Will Griffin, Tom Boulter, that's who I would take.
I think it looks like it's Boulter, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right, there we go. Ruffling feathers already, and we've only done two positions. Hooker is a bit more clear cut, so essentially you've only really got four players who are kind of fit and in considerations. You've got Elias Lake, Bradley Roberts, almost called him Brendan Rodgers again, Bradley Roberts, and Elliot D has played one game back. Darry Lake is the standout candidate for me. I think he's, as we said the other week, I think he should be starting too for me. I would take him, I'd take Elias, and I'd take D. I know I'm slightly biased because he's been on this podcast a few times, but I still think Elliot's got stuff to offer at international rugby.
I think,
what about you boys?
I think Elliot D, you know, when I've seen him play recently, I know he hasn't played that much recently, but he's got a real edge about him as well. I mean, if you rewind the clock about 18 months, he was sort of Ken Owens' long-term successor. Ryan Elias has had his problems throwing in, but, you know, I think he had a good season. I think he's, you know, he's been very good in the tight around the park, and his throwing in needs to improve, but he needs to improve even more, but he has improved, and I think he's clear. Elias and Lake are the clear one and two now, I think. So I'd be tempted to go for Elliot D because he's going to be pretty pissed off. I don't know if I can swear, but he's going to be pretty pissed off for that. And I just think he's going to have an edge about him. So I would edge him over Bradley Roberts.
Yeah, Murph's been on his best behaviour. It's the longest he's ever gone in a podcast without swearing. So over to you, Murph.
Yeah, I agree with Steph here because Bradley Roberts has just come in the side in the autumn and done okay when he's got off a bench. But he doesn't command many starts at Ulster. He'll probably end up coming over here when his contract is up.
He's joining the Dragons. He's joining the Dragons next season.
All right. Oh, okay. And then he'll be playing more often and we can have a good look at him. But at the moment, he's literally had his international career on the back of Ken Owens being unavailable for a year. We haven't actually seen much of him really on the pitch that often. So we know about Elliot D, and if he's relatively fresh from being on the sidelines a fair amount of time, it could go well.
Okay, I think we're all all right. Let's go with that then. Elias Lake and D as the three hookers into the locks. This gets a bit tricky actually because there's a few injury concerns. Ben Carter went off injured on Friday night with a shoulder injury. Will Rowlands has obviously missed the last couple of games. Christians is out injured as well, which really leaves fit second rows: Alan Wynne-Jones, Seb Davis, Adam Beard, Rhys Davis possibly at the Ospreys, Davith Jenkins, Exeter. I mean, we're struggling to get to six here, actually.
Lonsdale and George Knott as well. You could look
Lonsdale and Knott, you could, yeah.
But isn't Will Rowland expected to be fit by...
I hope he is, and I think he should be. Yeah. They're not going to. I, they're not going to risk him in the Dragons game next week. So, all right, let's work on the assumption that Rowland is fit. And I think he's...
Well, people have... One of Wales, people like...
he's been another one of Wales players of the season.
Right? Yeah, well, people like Moriarty and Wainwright and different people have already been ruled out of the tour. They haven't said anything about Will Rowland. So yeah. He must be in with a shout of being fit for the tour. So let's just assume he's... Otherwise, we can't get enough on the pitch.
All right, let's go. All right, so Rowland's goes. He's exactly the kind of player you want out there, I think, and he's had a fine season. I think you've got to take Alan Wynn, really, haven't you? I mean, it's not ideal, but I think
you need his leadership.
I think you do. Like, yeah.
Arden Beard's nailed goes. On as well.
Beard is nailed on. I think Davis has to go given that we've got very little experience.
Seb elsewhere. Davis.
Yeah, Seb Davis.
And
sorry.
He's versatile. He can play 6 and 8.
Yeah. Mm.
I mean, I had heard on the grapevine, the well-informed grapevine, that Dav Jenkins was being eyed up. I asked Rob Baxter, and he said something along the lines of, he's a future international star, but it's too early for him. You know, he's only 19. Apparently, their S&C guys and their medical guys had said that, you know, if he's thrown in against the box, then, you know, there's a greater chance of injury because... They reckon that Chris Chunza, the reason he's injured is because he got picked for Wales too soon, which is interesting and makes sense. Mm. I think like Dav Jenkins, you know, it might be a good, you know, be great experience for him if he just went and didn't play, you know, just to see what it's about and whatnot. But
at least Reece Davis,
who's been playing well.
I think he's been playing well.
I didn't see a lot of him when he was at Bath, but I think he's been playing very well since he joined the Ospreys. And he's just a nuts and bolts lock, I think, isn't he? He's just like grunt, hit rucks, bit of ball carrying, you know, line out option. It gives you he's not the flashiest lock, but I think he's got a fair bit about him.
Yeah, I like him.
All right, I think then that leaves us with. It depends on Carter if he's injured or not, though. I think the shoulder injury he went off with.
Oh, was it? Because the way it seemed against during the game, it seemed a bit of incongruous that you would take him off because they'd already lost Joe Davis.
Yeah, it was,
I thought it might have been a concussion, but it was his shoulder. So, I mean. He didn't look like he was in pain or in immediate need of medical attention. So hopefully it's just a stinger or just something precautionary, maybe.
All right. Okay. So we're saying then, Rowlands, Alwyn Jones, Seb Davis, Adam Beard all go. And then two of Reece Davis, Dav Jenkins, Ben Carter.
And remember, right, it depends on the back row. Because if you pick James Rafferty, he can also play lock. So you might want to...
Good point.
You might want to sort of.
That's a little point to the Steph's back row selections there. I'm happy for Reece Davis to be in the squad, and if Ben Carter's fit, he'll go. He'll definitely go if he's fit. So,
well, I'm going Reece Davis. Too early for Dav Jenkins. I listen to the experts and doctors.
Fair enough. And are we assuming Carter's fit as well?
If he's fit, he'll definitely go. But
take Carter and put Jenkins on a standby list. That's what I've done.
Okay, standby list for Dav Jenkins. Cool. All right, back row. Here we go. Interesting, Steph. You mentioned this when we were off air, but interesting story in the rugby paper this week that it seems as though Tommy Reffel is likely to get a call up for this one. Obviously, been part of a fine Leicester side this year, former under-20s captain, big prospect. Makes this even harder though, doesn't it, trying to figure out
I just want to say it's not my story though, so if it's not in the squad, blame Peter Jackson, not me, so just so everyone's aware.
Yeah,
but he is in my squad on this piece of paper, so.
All right, what's your back row then? You've given this more thought than either of us.
Here we go then. I've gone Tommy Reffel. His form demands it, really, doesn't it? Farlasau is nailed on. Basham's nailed on. I've gone Jack Morgan, arguably a form player in Wales, to be honest. Navidi as well. it's a difficult one because I really wanted to take both of them. That's why I keep asking for more for a 38 mask on a 37.
Right.
I also looked at Morgan Morris, but I just thought Ratty probably deserves it because he was in the Six Nations. And he's just got something about him. He's got size. He's got power. And I just think good coaching, not that, you know, coaching is questionable, obviously, but I just think there's just something about him, and he can play lock as well. So I've given Ratty the nod, but I'm sure a lot of people will disagree with me on that one.
I agree on Raffle. Faletau's nailed on. Navidi's nailed on. I would take Jack Morgan. I would take Ratty. I'd be tempted to leave Basham at home, if I'm honest. And as you know, I'm a massive fan of it.
Controversial.
But, you know, look, honestly, I love him. I absolutely love watching the kid play. But I just think there's too many sevens in there then.
What do we think of Morgan Morris? He's one of the form players in Wales. I mean, obviously, what we've got to consider is the step up from, because our pro teams aren't doing well, they're obviously not playing in the last stage of Europe and stuff. Mm. So, you could play well against the Dragons or the Scarlets, you know, who haven't got great defences. But is that really, you know, is winning man of the match against the Dragons really, is it a good measurement to whether you can take on Dwayne Vermeulen on the high belt?
Yes.
You know, saying that he can't. I'm just saying that I've gone for Ratty's size, over his. So it's a difficult one, isn't it?
This is where I like to use a horse racing comparison, and it's about picking form. And form against the Dragons equates to a wet Tuesday at Fosslass. It's not Cheltenham Gold Cup winning form. And again, that's not to say that Morgan Morris won't improve. He's had a brilliant season.
Yeah, he has played well against the likes of Ulster and Munster. And he deserved the call-up, but you can only take so many players. And I don't know, I think Ratty, he's in the Six Nations squad, and he sort of had a bit of a... He didn't play, but he had a taste of it, and size will
count. I fractionally prefer Ratty over Morris. What about you, Murph?
Well, I think in the absence of Wainwright and Moriarty, there's a serious lack of size in that back row. Even Navidi these days seems to be down to his fighting weight. He looks less like a blindside now at this weight than a seven. Therefore, poundage alone, I don't think I've got much option but to take James Ratty, because Morgan Morris is a small number eight. I mean, he's been playing on a flank as well lately. But I think without the ability, without the option of Moriarty or Wainwright, you haven't got much choice with James Ratty, I don't think. Again, quite often throughout this season, it's been more a case of who's fit rather than who you want to take. And that's pretty much, aside from the Ratty Morgan Morris option, that's pretty much what we're doing there, is just taking whoever's available.
I don't know, back row, there are more options in there, aren't you? You've got James Botham, and I think on form, he's unlucky to miss out. I just think we've got, like you said, there's a lack of size in the back row. Mm. And I think, does Jim Botham have more chance of becoming a world-class player than James Ratty? Probably. Mm. But James Ratty is a bigger lump, and I think that's what we need at the moment. And, he offers you good ball carrying and the ability to play in the second row as well. And I don't know, for me, I would go for him. And it's just down to that. I think we've got so many brilliant, dynamic, good over the ball back row players in Wales, but we're lacking in big ball carriers, I think, and just general size.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's
are
the
we fight? Any, are we any closer? Right.
Yeah, so we're going to take six open sides.
Yeah. Wow.
Right. Raffle is in. Toby is in. Navidi is in. Jack Morgan is in. Ratty is in.
Basham.
Steph says Basham.
Basham or both of them, is it? Is that the option?
Basham, Basham or Botham, or yeah, I mean, unless you wanted to take Ellis Jenkins or Ollie Griffiths or someone like that. But what do you say, Murph?
Versatility wise, in other words, can play 6, 7, 8. I would go Botham. Heavier carrier than Basham, arguably, or not?
I'm starting to persuade me now.
See, I've gone the other way now. I'm starting to think. Well, you know, on the high vault, you know, there's a bit of ball bobbles loose at the back of a ruck, bashes on it. I would go both of them.
I mean, okay, well, I'm outnumbered anyway. So.
Whoever goes whoever we take is gonna have a hard time of it against, you know, the South African back row anyway. So, and chances are neither of those be starters anyway. So, we'll see.
All right. Well, we'll go with both of them for this one. Right, scrum half. I think it's. I mean, I'm ignoring Reece Webb now. Anyone who wants to hear me fawn over Reece Webb, listen to the previous 5 years. I would go on the grounds that Pivac's ignoring Webb. I would go Thomas Williams, Gareth Davis, and I would go Kieran Hardy, actually. Steph, I know you're a fan of Rodri Williams. Did you make his case for this one?
Yeah, I went Thomas, Gareth and Rodri Williams. Although you could, you know, the form nine is Lloyd Williams.
Dan, is that you?
but I went Rodri. It's not going to make much difference because the pack's going to get stuck anyway. So.
Kieran Hardy hasn't been at his best this year for his club, anyway.
No, he hasn't. He's been barren in recent weeks.
A good second half against England and the Six Nations, but there's not much in his, like, for them this season. It's not a massive highlight reel from him, like it has been in the past. So it is a good point that Steph makes, and I suppose the only way to call it is what we think. I know this is our side, and we're not supposed to take into consideration Wayne Pivac, but I think Wayne would be loyal anyway. He'd be loyal to Kieran Hardy.
I think he will be.
Yeah. So, therefore, we as a trio should take Rodri.
the interesting thing, I think, is again, it's about, you know, who's got the opportunity to improve. And I'm not necessarily Kieran Hardy's biggest fan, if I'm honest. I think he's been good in fits and starts. He's not had a particularly spectacular season. But and Rodri's been, you know, has been really good for the Dragons the whole time he's been there. I just don't know whether he's got any more to give on international level, whether there's any more improvement to come from him. Whereas I think Hardy at least offers you a bit more pace and
you
know, a bit more athleticism.
That's a good point. Are there any other candidates? You could say Dane Blacker, but is he that level? I'm not sure.
I don't think he's that level yet, but I really like him. I think he's a, you know, real live wire nine.
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it, isn't it? You're looking ahead to the World Cup. So you've got Thomas and Gareth, who are probably nailed on for the World Cup. There's not many scrum halves coming through, but Rodri's probably deserves a chance. But is he going to get any better? Would it be wise to use the third spot to develop somebody who, by the World Cup or in the next World Cup cycle, could be an 8 out of 10 player? Not that I'm saying that Blacker will be that good. I'm just saying, is it a chance to look at somebody else? Is that the way to look at it?
Matthew comes on here, reckons that he's been playing better than Kieran Hardy for his club.
He has.
So,
without doubt.
Yeah.
If you pick on form, Blacker goes ahead of Hardy. That's all I'm saying.
Fuck it, I'm in.
But Steph picked Rodri.
I just think he deserves to be rewarded.
Who are you picking there, Murph?
And remember, Rodri's always going to pack. I'm going to sound stupid saying this now. Rodri's always going to be behind the pack and stuffed. If he goes to South Africa, it's going to be the same, isn't it? But moving forward, if he's behind a pack with a bit more of a platform, you know, I think he's better than what he's shown. So I just think he deserves to be rewarded for his performances.
He was behind a good pack at under 20 level and shone and was the next big thing and the bright prospect, and then ended up It's not just the Dragons. Most regional sides forwards are normally getting a hiding off an Irish club or a Scottish club anyway. So it's not just Rodri, really, but probably suffers more at the Dragons than the other regions. But when he was on the front foot as a youngster, he was brilliant. So it's just whether the age thing. I know Kieran's not a puppy either. So there could be a Dame Blacker argument there.
We go need on, to stop sitting on the fence.
Go on, Blacker's in. Blacker, go on, take him. Okay. Blacker.
Okay. Yeah, Blacker.
Fine, Blacker. Yeah.
There we go. Right, we're in. Right, outside half. Candidates, Bigger, Anscombe, Sheedy, Priestland, Costello.
Don't say Will Reid.
I wasn't going to say Will Reid. I'm nurturing these Dragons. That's why I wanted to keep Tane Basham safe
as captain. it's pretty straightforward. Right. The first two in this, it's bigger than Anscombe.
Yeah,
and then this will take third.
Yeah, if Patchell could stay fit for any period of time, I'd love to. I just wouldn't be in a rush to rush him back for this tour.
Yeah. I'm gonna make a case for Sam Costello.
I knew that was coming.
I just think what I like about Costello, and I remember talking to Paul Turner, the former Dragons coach, who I respect a lot, when he'd signed. I think I interviewed him when the Scarlets announced that they'd signed him, because when he was at Leicester, he spent some when he was a real kid, but he's still a kid, but when he was a baby, spent time alone at Ampthill. And what Paul was saying was, when there are a lot of players who look great on the front foot, but what Costello's good at is when things don't go his way, like his problem solving is really good. You know, he's good on the back foot, and when the original game plan doesn't work, he's got the ability to change it. There's a bit of a Dan Bigger in there. You know, he's small, but he is, that goes against him, but he is brave in defence. And that game against the Ospreys a few weeks back, Anscombe got the headlines and he was excellent, but he had an armchair ride. But Costello is just as good. And I don't know, with Callum Sheedy, I mean, they'd probably stick with Sheedy, and he's a good player, but he's perhaps a bit out of form. But
yeah,
I just think long term, Sheedy at best is 7 out of 10. Costello could be 9 out of 10, 8, 9 out of 10 in a few years. I mean, I'm being ambitious here. I'm being a bit bold, but I'm going Costello, but it probably could shoot better.
I'm inclined to agree. I don't think Callum Sheedy is anywhere near the player he was when he first broke into the Welsh squad. And therefore, the same logic we've used with Blacker, you could easily apply. You've got two front line players, if you like, two first choice players, match day squad players, and then take a youngster to bring them on. And I think that would be a tidy shout, because without Patchell being regularly fit, I'm not interested in taking Rhys Priestland. Obviously, I don't think anyone is.
No.
And I don't think Sheedy's playing as well as he was when he first got on the Welsh squad.
The one,
no, to me,
yeah. when Cardiff fans listen to this, presumably you're one of them, they're gonna really go to town on me, because I haven't said Jared Evans, who's been playing really well. He's probably the most naturally gifted 10 we've got. He's a great attacking 10, but there's still, I know Pivac has always had doubts over his game management, and I do share those a little bit in a big game. He's got the ability, but he still hasn't proved that when the going gets tough, that he's got the answers to get his team out of trouble. And I've gone Costello because I think he's shown he can do that at regional level. But I know Cardiff fans aren't going to be happy with me. So.
Well, I think if anyone wants to make an argument, they have to be in a position where Jared Evans is out and out first choice for Cardiff, and he keep picking a 34, 35-year-old in front of him. Something's not right, and so, certainly not enough is right to want to put him in a South African tour. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I think selection at club level, I don't know. I think if it was a big game, I think Dyer'd pick Jared Evans at 10. I think it's probably just a bit of end of season, to go back to our point about meaningless rugby, a bit of end of season rotation. I love watching Jared play, but I'm not entirely convinced I'd be taking him on this tour. Sheedy, I think, is one of those players that you mentioned who looks a lot better behind a pack that's going forward, and life looks a lot harder when it's going backwards. So I'd be quite happy with Costello going, to be honest.
Impressive selection, that's what I like about.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Oh, right, this is where it gets interesting. Yeah. Centres.
Stranded, no.
Pick the bones out of this one. Right, who's fit? Owen Watkin, George North, Johnny Williams, Nick Tompkins, John Fox, Jack Dixon. Anyone I've missed here? We're going to take four of these, I imagine.
Centre's a problem position. They're not going to wait for that. Michael Collins. He's not in my squad, but you could look at him.
No.
It gets a lot easier, I think, for the starting 15 selection if George North is fit. Because, we know, he's gone through so many combinations in the last 10 months or whatever it is, that if you just decide George is going to play 13, then all you've got to do is, from Wayne's point of view, is make your mind up who your 12 is. And so you could end up with a settled centre combination for the first time in a long time. But,
I think he'll go. I know he's not playing much rugby, but I think he'll
get it.
He needs, Pivak needs all his main weapons available to him. To this is damage limitation stuff. I'm not going to shy away from that. But North, at his best, is one of the few world-class players we've got. He was, prior to his injury, I mean, he was the best rugby he was playing for years. And it was a big, even though he was injured before the Lions selected their squad, I think he would have been in that squad, and I think losing him was a big blow for the Lions. And he's not going to be at his best because I don't think he's fully fit. But I think you just got to take your best players, and he's one of them. So I think he's got to go, isn't he?
Okay. Who else falls into that bracket? I would make a case for Johnny Williams, if I'm honest.
Not in my squad.
Hmm. I just think he's no nonsense. He runs hard. Does the basics well. I know he had a stinking bit of ill discipline against the Ospreys the other week, but I just think in a back line that crabs all the time, I'd be tempted to take him. But I mean, look, Tompkins will go as well, won't he? We know Tompkins will go.
Oxy is past his best, but has been playing well for the Scarlets and needs experience, so he'd probably tour.
I'd take him.
Only because we're thin on the ground. If you had any options, you probably wouldn't take. I'm trying to be kind here. Past his best, John Davis, or over the hill. You know, there is an argument that Johnny Williams is a better option because he's can still move. But once you get past Halaholo's unavailable. Once you get past your first three centres, you do start to struggle in at the moment in Wales.
I mean, Owen Watkin, to his credit, you know, he is playing well. He's one of the form centres. He has added to his attacking game, which is what the Welsh coaches wanted. But, you know, you look at what they'll be up against, probably, if they're fit, Lucan Yoam and Damien Dialende. And it's a mismatch, really, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah.
I mean, we'll look back in years to come at Dialende and Am as, like, one of those all-time great centre partnerships. You know, the absolute... cream of talent. I would take Watkin as well.
I've had Foxy, North, Tompkins, Watkin, and that's who I've had. My original squad.
No, they normally take a bare four centres, don't they?
Yeah, it will be a bare four. Yeah. So what do you reckon, Murph? Who would you take?
I broadly agree with that, but I would probably go Johnny Williams over John Fox.
Okay.
I've only gone for John from Fox over on experience. I can understand why Johnny Williams get the nod.
All right, let's go with that. I would have gone for John Fox over Nick Tompkins, which is just my irrational dislike of Nick Tompkins. I don't know what it is. You know,
he's playing well at the moment,
tearing it up for Saracens. Mm. So I can't be so petty as that. Right, and then a back three. What are we saying? Six players here.
I'm excited about the back three. I was looking through all the options, and this is a position where we got a bit of strength. So. Do you want to go first, Jed?
I would take Liam Williams. I would take Josh Adams if he's fit. I would take Lewis Rees-Zammit, especially given it's South Africa, hard ground, all those cliches. I would take Alex Cuthbert. I would take then, this is where it gets interesting, I would take Keelan Giles.
Oof. Ryan Combier.
Yeah,
it's a toss-up between the two.
Keelan Giles, and then I think, wow.
Yeah, it's between Giles and Combier for me, and then I think you have to take McNichol as your kind of... As your cover 15,
if he's
really.
If he's fit. I've gone Liam Williams, Lewis Rees-Zammit, Alex Cuthbert, Josh Adams, with Giles on standby, Combier. I like Tom Rogers, but I've gone Johan Lloyd.
Forgotten about Tom Rogers, yeah.
Johan Lloyd, because he can play anywhere in the background. Yeah. But I like Rogers has been injured the last few weeks, but he reminds me of Liam Williams when he was coming through. He's a very sort of dangerous attacking player. He's deadly in broken fields, but he's got dog about him as well. He's, you know, he's good in the high ball. He's really aggressive. He is prone to moments of, you know, recklessness. But Rodgers is in a wing. He's a fullback. But I just like him. I just think it's Matt Prothro for me is not good enough in defence. So I wouldn't take him. But I like Rodgers. But Johan Lloyd has utility value. So.
I think Johan Lloyd's a really interesting prospect going forward. Would I take him on this tour? Don't know. I mean, look, if Johan Lloyd is there in the squad when Pivac names it next week, I'd be delighted. Right, what are you saying, Murph?
I think Ryan Combier is probably the form. Outside of Rees-Zammit,
yeah,
who was
scoring
mega tries for Gloucester out of nowhere on a regular basis. Ryan Combier is probably the form winger in Wales, so I think he has to go. Johan Lloyd, my only reservation with Johan Lloyd is we still don't know exactly what he is. The best I've seen him play for Bristol was inside centre against the Scarlets earlier this season. But I don't know if he's got the bulk to do that on a regular basis.
Obviously, the Scarlets gave an armchair, right, didn't they? What I like about Combier...
It's slightly different doing that in South Africa, isn't it?
Combier is he's a strong bugger, isn't he? He's very physical. Like, Giles was great against the Scarlets. He's got electric pace. Combier's got pace as well, not quite as fast as Giles, but he's just so physical.
He can bump a player.
There was the try he scored against the Ospreys. Again, I'm not saying he could do this against the box, but he brushed off Watkins, he swatted aside North with ease, and there was another defender, you know, he brushed aside to score. He just scores tries for fun, and I don't know, I just think he's more suited to international rugby than Giles.
It's more suited to the physicality they're going to face as well. Like, if there was like a one-on-one tackle, the line, Keelan Giles would just get rolled over, no doubt in my mind. But as Combi would make the tackle, I think. So I would probably be against Johan Lloyd because I don't know what he's built like a nine, but he doesn't play nine. He's played everywhere in the back line apart from nine this season, I think, unless I'm mistaken.
He has actually played 10 minutes of scrum half.
All right. So that's everybody.
Take that box as well.
Yeah. I know he can come off the bench and do magic things, and he's really great to watch. But until we know exactly what position he is, I wouldn't bother with him at international level. And he's not international pace as a winger. You know.
Also, I suppose what goes against him is if he plays in a back three, which is where I suppose he would get picked if he played in this tour. He'd be behind a pack end tuned. Springboks are the best kicking game in the world. Pollard will be putting up and unders, pinpoint accuracy, and he'll have the likes of DLND and Am and all these guys, right in his face. I would back Combier and Rogers, for example, if you're going to take kids to stand up to that a bit better than Lloyd.
Yeah, I'd be that way inclined, but in reality, I think you'd be faithful to McNichol over those youngsters.
If he's fit.
He will.
If he's fit.
Oh, he's in. Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
He's a doubt.
Righto. Well, so is Josh Adams.
Yeah.
So, you know, we could end up with all of those kids going.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, we know it's right now Cuthbert's fit, so he goes.
Yeah.
Lewis Rees Zammit is fit, he goes. Liam's fit, he goes. Then, look, based on your arguments, I think you made both of you made solid case for Combier, so he goes.
One more.
Two, I'd say, wouldn't you?
Oh, we take back, six backfield, is it?
Hang on, how many have I got? Oh, this is where Steph's gonna go ballistic in the air. One, two, three. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Owen Lane has gone backwards this season.
Yeah, I didn't really consider him for my squad, to be honest.
Well, it tells you everything that we haven't even mentioned him until now. You know, we would definitely mention him last night.
I think it's a little harsh. I don't think he's gone backwards. I think he's had some.
I think he played well last couple of weeks, but again, has he got the?
It's the pace for me. That's
is he better? Would he be better moving to centre? I think he's got better potential at centre, but.
Yeah, probably does. Level, but he never plays there. Like everyone always talks about this as Owen Lane. Oh, you know, yeah, he's potentially a really good centre. But I've seen him play one game there. I think
you know when he'll get his opportunity in a Six Nations game.
Yeah, against.
Yeah, having never done England, it for probably. His club before. Right. That's when it'll happen.
Yeah,
that's typical. All
right. So this is it then, right? Liam Williams, Ryan Combier, Lewis Rees Zammit, Alex Cuthbert, and then you're right, Murph. It's only one, so it's either.
Rodgers,
Adams, McNichol, or Rodgers. So if it's fit, if Adams is fit, he goes. We're assuming he is fit.
If he's not, I'm going to go Rodgers. But
yeah,
all right, I'm with you on him on the standby list.
Again, they haven't ruled him out to the tour, have they, Josh? So he must be in with a chance because, I say, Halaholo's been ruled out and various other people have been ruled out now. So
they've got to be sensible as well, haven't they? These boys are going to play a lot of brutal rugby before the World Cup.
Yeah.
Why risk Josh Adams if he's not 100%?
Yeah, and also, you know, he didn't have a summer off. He was on the Lions tour last summer. So, yeah, exactly. You know, he's on a long season at the moment. So
and he missed the birth of his child as well. I think he deserves a bit of time off. So, as you say, why risk him if he's not 100% fit?
Mm.
What's the point?
Well, we won't have long to find out until Pivac names his side next week, and we'll be back to
react.
It is next week, amazing. Yeah, okay. Believe so. Unless I've completely made that up. Tuesday, there you go. We'll be reacting to that next week. I promised Steph it'd be a quick podcast, and it has not. Thanks for your patience. Murph knows me too well that if I was to tell him that lie, he'd have completely ignored it. So thanks both of you for joining. Thank you to everyone for listening. And as always, a thanks to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. You can get some top quality coffee at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Right, we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.